need to take a public position against these deportations, and they need to make sure that Mohsen next month can graduate his bachelor's degree. And this fall, Mohsen is supposed to start his master's degree in international relations. The university needs to do everything in their power to make that happen.
You write in your piece that the targeting of Mohsen is especially absurd, given his prominent voice in advocating for dialogue and cooperation between Israelis and Palestinians. You believe he was targeted clearly. In this final minute, what is your demand even beyond Colombia?
Release Mohsen. Stop these deportations. Allow this new generation to continue having conversations, to continue meeting so that we can build a collective future for ourselves and for our children. What Mohsen represents is new, and new can be scary for some people, but new on both sides of this conflict is exactly what Israelis and Palestinians need to end the conflict and to create peace.
Josh Dro, we want to thank you for being with us. I know you're going to a peace conference in Geneva today, safe flying. Josh is a student pursuing a Master of Science in Strategic Communications at Columbia University. We'll link to your piece in the foreword. As Israelis in New York were horrified by ICE's detention of one of our Palestinian partners in peace. This is Democracy Now! To see our video and audio podcast, to sign up for our daily digest, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us for another edition of Democracy Now!
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
A federal investigation into alleged misconduct by former Oregon Secretary of State Shamia Fagan is closed with no charges.
Portland City Councilor Steve Novick proposes increasing revenue to meet the city's budget shortfall.
And in international news, millions mourn the death of Pope Francis.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, April 21st, 2025. I'm Anna Wilcox.
And I'm Dave Johnson. A federal investigation into potential misconduct by former Oregon Secretary of State Shamia Fagan is closed. No charges filed. Fagan resigned in 2023 after taking a private consulting contract with a controversial cannabis firm while her office was auditing the state's oversight of that industry. It paid her $10,000 a month, far more than her $77,000 a year salary as Secretary of State. Concerns about that conflict of interest came at Fagan from all sides, so she resigned. The federal investigation into wrongdoing is closed, though with no word on why. The lack of federal charges doesn't end possible trouble for Fagan. The Oregon Government Ethics Commission started a similar probe into her conduct in 2023, and a pause is one of the feds got involved. Now, that investigation is starting back up.
Portland is facing a big budget shortfall, currently estimated to be about $93 million. The mayor and city councilors will need to cut back the city's spending in order to match what their revenue looks like. The shortfall is in the general fund, which goes toward police, fire, homeless service, services, and parks. Big cuts to parks and slashing parks maintenance are some of the proposed ways to close budget gaps. But after holding listening sessions across all four city council districts, it's become clear cutting the work of the Parks Department, which includes things like summer camps and running community centers, is unpopular with Portlanders. At a meeting of the Finance Committee today, Councillor Steve Novick offered an alternative plan: raise revenue.
We have a deficit in the general fund, which overwhelmingly goes to police, fire, other public safety programs, parks, and homeless services. I am not particularly excited about making deep cuts in any of those things. And that's one of the reasons I started thinking about looking for ways to raise revenue. I suspect that most of my colleagues aren't excited about making cuts in those things either. And I actually have a real concern that we might wind up rubber stamping the mayor's budget. Because when the mayor's budget comes out, some people will be upset in some ways, some people will be upset in others. We'll have very limited time to try to come to consensus on additions and subtractions. And I worry that we might end up just saying the simplest thing to do is just approve the mayor's budget. It changes the dynamic if we have additional revenue to work with. And you'll make it easier to come to consensus, as long with, I think, being the right thing to do, because I don't think we should be making deep cuts in police, fire, parks, or homeless services. In thinking about revenue options, one thing that came to mind is to use the same taxing mechanism that we used the Portland Clean Energy Fund, a mechanism that was adopted by over 60% of Portland voters in 2018. As you know, PSEF was designed to address climate change and environmental justice. It's funded through a 1% gross receipts tax on giant corporations that make $1 billion nationally, at least 500,000 in the Portland area. The proposal would increase the current surcharge in giant retailers from 1% to 1.33%. Again, that only affects corporations with at least $1 billion in national revenue and $500,000 in sales in Portland. Only 1% of these companies, according to the Revenue Bureau, are headquartered in Portland. Although the proposal uses the same tax mechanism as PSEF, the additional revenue would be directed towards the general fund, and PSEF would keep its 1%, its $200 million a year. Groceries, pharmaceuticals, and some other necessities aren't affected by the current PSEF surcharge. They wouldn't be taxed under the increase either. Recently, Councillor Pirtle Guinea and I commissioned a poll of Portlanders on the choices facing us, asking a lot of questions about trade-offs. And we got the top lines of that poll back the other day. I did want to ask the question, after we discussed the cuts that we are considering in council and the mayor is considering, there's a proposal to add 0.33% to this 1% tax giant retailers pay that would be enough to address a lot of these cuts. Would you support or oppose that proposal? And 69% of people said that as an alternative to the kind of cuts that we are considering, they would prefer to adopt a tax of this nature.
Councillor Novick's plan is to increase the money coming into the city through the clean energy surcharge, which goes toward the Portland Clean Energy Fund, or PSEF. It would increase the tax on large retailers from 1% to 1.33%. That extra 0.33% would go toward the city's general fund. Novick says the tax could be backdated to the beginning of the year and could bring in some $66 million. He also said it's important not to pull from the PSEF fund, which is strictly devoted to climate change projects. His proposal would also be paired with a business tax cut for small businesses. The proposed ordinance has not been formally heard by the Finance Committee yet, but Novick expects to draft it soon. He says it's okay if it's delayed from the mayor's budget with more money. The councilors can then go to their cuts and add things back. Mayor Keith Wilson's budget will be made public on Monday, May 5th.
5 years after the killing of George Floyd and the mass protest in support of police reforms that followed, Oregon's progress on quelling police violence is mixed. Isabel Charlet has more.
5 years after George Floyd's murder by a white police officer sparked nationwide protests and demands for police reform, progress remains slow. Across the country, police were involved in more killings in 2024 than any year in more than a decade, including 17 in Oregon, and Black people continue to be killed disproportionately. ACLU of Oregon Executive Director Sandy Chung says some police reform measures in the state, like banning tear gas and decriminalizing drug use, were passed after the protests and revoked soon after.
There have been a lot of fights we've had to make sure that the powers of the police aren't expanded in ways that are really harmful to our democracy and civil liberty and civil rights.
A 2021 Oregon law established the Commission on Statewide Law Enforcement Standards of Conduct and Discipline, which Chung supports. However, she notes that it lacks a protocol for addressing officers involved in white supremacist groups. Chung criticizes an Oregon bill that just passed the Senate that would expand police drone surveillance with less court oversight. She argues that more funding and power for law enforcement won't improve community safety. This is especially dangerous now, as she warns the Trump administration is weaponizing policing to target opponents and suppress free speech. Chung says Oregonians know that addressing the root causes of crime is what makes communities safer.
To make sure people have access to good jobs, to healthcare, to schooling, to housing.
Chung adds that many of the most successful police reforms are happening on a local rather than a state level, and points to the Community Board for Police Accountability created by Portland voters in 2020. She says the model, which has not yet been implemented, incorporates the best practices recommended for an oversight committee. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Oregon students may soon be banned from using their phones during school hours. House Bill 2251 passed out of the House with 36 votes and bipartisan support. It bans students from using personal electronics while they're at school. Lawmakers believe that the ban could help students focus better in the classroom. Under HB 2251, local school boards could have a say in how the ban is enforced in their schools. There's a split among Republicans if supporting the bill is the correct choice. There have already been student phone restrictions in Oregon's largest school district, the Portland Public Schools, which started in January. With Portland's policy, all students must turn off their phones and smartwatches and other distracting electronics during school hours. However, there are exceptions to the rules. One of the exceptions is for students with disabilities to help them communicate and learn effectively. Some representatives say cell phones should be used as a tool, and they're important for parents to be able to reach their kids in case of emergency. The state Senate is now considering the bill.
Pope Francis passed away today at the age of 88. He led the Catholic Church for the last 12 years. Pope Francis was the first Latin American pope and was known for his compassion towards the poor and the marginalized, including LGBTQ folks. He was the first pope to say, quote, being homosexual is not a crime, end quote. At his last public appearance, he called for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. He called the lone Catholic church in Gaza frequently, checking on the Palestinians there. He also apologized to First Nations in Canada for the Catholic Church's role in the leading residential school system that killed many Indigenous children. Francis took over the papacy during a strained time for the Catholic Church as the international cover-up of child sexual abuse by some priests was unfolding. Leaders from across faiths and across the globe have expressed their sorrow at his passing, and millions of Catholics are in mourning. The Pope's death was identified as a stroke, followed by coma and cardiac circulatory collapse. He made his last appearance on Easter Sunday to bless thousands of people, including Vice President J.D. Vance. Thousands of people have gathered to mourn his death in St. Peter's Square and other places all across the world. His death means a new pope must be selected by the cardinals of the Catholic Church in a process called the conclave.
Senator Van Hollen warns of a constitutional crisis after his El Salvador trip. Defense Secretary Hegseth shares military information in a second signal chat, and former President Clinton calls for unity while commemorating the Oklahoma City bombing. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with the 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. My whole point here is if you deprive one man of his constitutional rights, you threaten the constitutional rights of everybody.
Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen says his recent El Salvador trip to check on a wrongfully deported man was about defending the right to due process, not about defending the man's reputation. Van Hollen says the United States is in a constitutional crisis because the Trump administration is flouting the courts to detain and deport people. The White House continues to allege Gilmar Abrego Garcia is a member of MS-13, even though a police informant accused him of being a member of the gang in upstate New York, where Abrego Garcia never actually lived. Border czar Tom Homan says Van Hollen traveled at taxpayer expense to meet with someone in a group designated as a terrorist organization.
Day before he traveled, an illegal alien was arrested for murder, released to the streets rather than honoring an ICE detainer in his very own state. What concerns me is Van Hollen never went to the border the last 4 years under Joe Biden.
The administration is moving to each week withdraw Social Security numbers from thousands of migrants who've had their visas revoked. Monica Sarimiento with the Virginia Coalition for Immigrant Rights says workers without legal status actually pay enormous amounts in taxes, about $25 billion a year to Social Security, but almost never collect the benefits.
Most immigrants are here because they want a better life for themselves and their families and want to contribute willingly and pay taxes. For that, they need a Social Security number.
This month, the IRS will start sharing information on undocumented taxpayers with ICE. Administration officials say that'll encourage them to self-deport. The New York Times reports Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth shared detailed information about military strikes against the Iran-aligned Houthis in Yemen in a second Signal chat, this time one he himself created. The group chat included his wife, brother, and personal lawyer. And like an earlier group chat started by the National Security Advisor, it detailed warplane flight schedules. 5 years after George Floyd's murder by a white police officer, a new study says police are killing people at a higher rate than any time in more than a decade. Dom Campis with the Washington Coalition for Police Accountability says black people continue to die at disproportionate rates.
We need people to step up to the plate. We need legislators to work with us. We need law enforcement to work with us. And we can enact sensible alternatives to what's currently happening.
Finally, former President Bill Clinton called for unity during a speech on the 30th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing, the deadliest domestic terror attack in American history. Commemorating the death of nearly 170 people, Clinton says people need to understand the pointless senselessness of political violence. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth look at today's Portland Transportation Committee presentation on the Rose Quarter I-5 expansion. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knocks Radio. Tonight's weather will be mostly clear with an overnight low of 44 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 64. Today in history, in 1962, the Seattle World's Fair opened. It was the first World's Fair in the U.S. since World War II. The quote of the day is from novelist Charlotte Bronte. Born this day in 1866, she wrote in Jane Eyre, quote, "If people were always kind and obedient to those who were cruel and unjust, the wicked people would have it all their way. They would never feel afraid, and so they would never alter, but would grow worse and worse."
Indigenous Catholics are mourning the Easter Monday death of Pope Francis. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The life and legacy of Pope Francis is being remembered after the Vatican announced his death Monday morning. In 2022, in Rome and on Canadian soil, Pope Francis apologized to Indigenous people for the Catholic Church's role in the residential school system in Canada and for the abuses they suffered. The apology included Pope Francis saying he was sorry and asked for forgiveness. The schools operated from the late 1800s to the 1990s. His apology was met with mixed reactions. Pope Francis was 88 years old. Bison are being restored to tribal lands across the Mountain West and the Great Plains. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Rachel Cohen reports, a herd managed by a city in Colorado is playing a big role.
A few bison jumped into a grass-lined trailer. They were heading to the Kiowa tribe in Oklahoma. The bison are part of two herds that live in mountain parks owned by the city and county of Denver. And the city gave these 10 away so the Kiowa tribe could start its first herd in over 150 years. Bison were hunted to near extinction in the 1800s. Rick Williams is Oglala Lakota in Northern Cheyenne and was at the bison transfer in March. He says it included a ceremony and a song for a safe journey.
The buffalo were a sacred animal to us. You know, we knew that they provided all of our economy and our lifestyle and everything that we needed to survive.
Denver's donation is part of a larger effort to give surplus bison from conservation herds and national parks to tribes to restore cultural and environmental connections. Over the past 7 years, Denver has given 140 bison to 10 tribes. That includes the Northern Arapaho in Wyoming and the Northern Cheyenne in Montana. I'm Rachel Cohen.
Native young people from across the country are representing their communities on a national level this year. They were picked as champions for change by the Aspen Institute Center for Native American Youth. The group is sharpening their leadership skills while highlighting stories of impact from tribal communities. KNBA's Jill Freitas has more.
Each year, CNAY selects five inspirational youth, ages 14 to 24, from across the country to serve as champs, supporting their development through experience-based learning and tailored advocacy training. One of the champs is Myrook Jones from Unalakleet. Jones is focusing on environmental issues. She's studying environmental science at Western Washington University. She says she's been invested in climate change and its impacts on rural communities since a young age, and has seen changes to her community through her own eyes.
I think over the time I was growing up, you can't help but see those changes in the environment. I was a kid, I used to be able to set crab pots on the sea ice with my dad. We'd go out on a snow machine and we'd set crab pots a few miles out. But the last time I stepped foot on sea ice, I couldn't even walk more than 10 feet before it got too dangerous to even go any further.
Jones and other champs took part in a gathering in Washington, D.C. earlier this month, where she heard many stories similar to hers from different areas across the country, from clean water to subsistence to limited resources. She says she knew that she wanted to be a voice for her region and to help find solutions.
The changes in the way from how I grew up to now has really led me to pursue environmental justice and dedicate time to that, because I think it's really important to ensure that future generations are able to hunt for caribou and fish for salmon like I was able to, and to be able to bring those things back to my community is really important to me.
Champions for Change has been around for more than 10 years. This year's youth leaders are all in their 20s and also are from Hawaii, Oklahoma, Michigan, and Arizona. I'm Jill Freitas.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
April is Financial Literacy Awareness Month. Many people are stretching their dollars to cover basic expenses and feeling nervous about the unpredictable U.S. economy. One financial planner says it may be time to update your spending plan or put one together if you don't have one. Terry D. has more in Indiana.
This is Financial Literacy Awareness Month, and Hoosiers who are worried about inflation or watching their retirement account on the stock market roller coaster may be wondering what they should do. Many households are still recovering from the economic impact of the pandemic, according to the Indiana United Way. Creating a spending plan and identifying priorities is a good first step, advises Todd Christensen with the nonprofit Money Fit Financial. If you are considering buying a car or house, or taking a vacation, he notes a budget is about more than dollars and cents.
Whatever it is that motivates you, set a purpose is number one. Number two is not to start adding income. That's usually where people start, but you've got to prioritize expenses. If you don't prioritize them, you will inevitably have to start eliminating expenses anyway, and you'll go with your emotions rather than with the rational part of your brain.
Christensen sees cash, credit cards, and the popular buy now, pay later apps as convenient tools that consumers often misuse. It is this convenience that prompts human nature to kick in and encourage overspending. He suggests having two checking accounts, one for automatic bill payment, another for fun purchases, and a savings account for long and short-term goals. Christensen supports teaching kids good money management habits before they earn spending cash as teens by mowing lawns, babysitting, or doing chores. If they are not taught how to take care of small amounts of money as early as possible, he cautions, they will be terrible with larger amounts as adults.
By age two, children have been in their parents' arms going through a checkout stand enough times that they know that there's an exchange going on. So they're learning that there's something magical about that plastic card, or about the phone that they tap.
The Indiana Department of Education mandates that all students in grades 8 through 12 must have one semester of personal financial responsibility instruction, including lessons on debt management, savings, retirement, and investment accounts. This is Terry D. for Indiana News Service.
The Trump administration has taken steps to withdraw Social Security numbers from immigrants who have had their visas revoked. The decision has affected thousands of people, with more expected in the coming weeks. And research indicates it will also affect local, state, and federal tax revenue. Zamon Perez has more in Virginia.
President Donald Trump continues his pressure campaign on immigrants, both documented and undocumented, disrupting the lives of many in Virginia. As the administration revokes thousands of visas of legal immigrants, the Social Security Administration has reportedly removed thousands of names to what it's known as its death master file. That move essentially stops a person's ability to work, open a bank account, or apply for a credit card. Monica Sarmiento with the Virginia Coalition for Immigrant Rights says these actions hinder people's ability to contribute to society, including the more than 17% of immigrants in Virginia's workforce.
Most immigrants are here because they want a better life for themselves and their families and want to contribute willingly and pay taxes. For that, they need a Social Security number.
This month, the Internal Revenue Service also said it would share information on undocumented taxpayers with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Administration officials have defended these policies, saying they'll encourage affected migrants to self-deport to their home countries. But advocates like Sarmiento argue that immigrants of all status levels pay taxes, often in an effort to contribute to the country.
Immigrants pay taxes. They don't just want to pay taxes. They actively pay taxes. And lots of immigrants and documented immigrants has been very well recorded, pay billions of dollars in taxes every year, as well as non-citizen residents of the United States.
According to the American Immigration Council, undocumented immigrants alone in 2023 contributed nearly $90 billion in taxes to their federal, state, and local governments. I'm Zamon Perez, Virginia News Connection.
Colorado regulators are issuing licenses for providing psychedelic mushrooms and are planning to authorize the state's first healing centers where the mushrooms can be ingested under supervision. Oregon providers started offering psilocybin therapy in 2023. Eric Galatis has more.
Colorado regulators are issuing licenses for healing centers that would provide psychedelic mushrooms to improve mental health. The Food and Drug Administration recently designated this as a breakthrough therapy, according to reporting from KFF Health News. Tasha Poinsatt with the Healing Advocacy Fund says unlike traditional therapy combined with medication, people can see benefits in just 2 to 3 sessions.
When you bring psilocybin therapy into the picture, people are doing 1 to 2 higher dose sessions in this clinical research and really seeing pronounced improvement on symptoms of depression and reduced substance use if they're struggling with addiction.
Colorado voters approved Proposition 122 in 2022 to legalize natural psychedelics for therapeutic use. The mushrooms are still illegal under federal law except for clinical research, but in the past 5 years, more than a dozen cities nationwide have deprioritized or decriminalized their use. Therapy starts with a consultation and screening to see if mushrooms are a good fit. Participants talk about their intentions before ingesting, and Poinsatt says what happens after that depends on the individual. Some say they feel intense joy and connectedness to the universe. Others may feel profound sadness and pain as they revisit traumatic events and see how their lives have been affected.
You might gain new understandings or insights during that experience, but it's really important afterwards to then have a plan for how you're going to process that and how you're going to potentially make changes in your life that reflect what came up for you during the experience.
Mushrooms have been used in healing, spiritual and ceremonial contexts by cultures around the world for thousands of years. Poinsett believes this alternative therapy option can help more people who have difficult-to-treat conditions make it through to the other side.
It's exciting to be in this moment in Colorado where people are going to be able to legally explore this as an option with support, with guidance from a trained and licensed facilitator to hopefully be able to really make progress and make improvement where they weren't able to previously.
The story was produced with original reporting from Kate Reuter for KFF Health News.
This is Eric Galatis for the Colorado News Connection.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News from Monday, April 21st, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes David Rosenberg and Onyx. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Eric Gladys, Antonio Gonzalez, and Terry D. The director of this evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Anna Wilcox.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Dave Johnson. The Oregon Department of Transportation, or ODOT, has finally gotten funding to start